See you. Where are you from? Shanghai. I love Shanghai. I was there 2 months ago. Well, we're really glad that you're here. I would practice my Mandarin, but it's really bad. Like, really bad. So, glad you're here. Can we have the quiet in the chamber? How do you say thank you? Thank you. All right, we will gather back together now. They're so cute. Bye.
It's quite the field trip.
That is quite the field trip. In fourth grade, we just like went to the local dairy, you know. You come all the way to Portland. All right, we'll come back to order. And Carla, can you, we have a 3 o'clock time certain. So what I'd like to do is if you could read both 49 and 50. So that if people need to get going, if they've signed up and they want to speak to any item on the federal agenda, but we'll be working from the list for the signups on 49.
Okay.
So if you could please read both 49 and 50.
Okay. 49, established as a position of the Portland City Council that corporations should not receive the same legal rights as natural persons do, that money is not speech, and that independent expenditures should be regulated.
And there is a...
And 50. Accept the report on the 2012 federal legislative agenda.
And then I move to substitute, which is based on the January 12th amendment.
Second.
Memo. It's been moved and seconded. Please call the vote.
Fritz?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. All right. That serves as the basis of discussion. You know, our discussion just a moment ago repeats an experience that I often have sitting in this chair, serving as a member of the city council and as your mayor. And it's an experience of being impressed by the thoughtfulness, constantly impressed by the thoughtfulness in which people discuss issues, whether they're in their neighborhood, citywide, national, or global issues. It's I'm especially grateful for that, and I think it's a very Portland-like trait, but I'm especially grateful for that because the dialogue and the nature of discussion in the bigger media, however you want to describe it, or social media, in my humble opinion, has gotten even oftentimes more superficial and more bombastic and more inartful and less humane and further away from the complexity that is often the reality. And I wanted to say a few things up front, at least some of my legislative intent, and I'll try to be very quick about this resolution. The city of Portland, in the city of Portland, about 76%, so almost 8 in 10 businesses in the city of Portland employ less than 10 people. It means that in the city of Portland, corporations, small corporations, are a huge part of our economy, a bigger part of our economy than the small micro entrepreneurs, a bigger part of our economy than a lot of other metropolitan areas. But they are businesses, they are corporations. And so no city is perfect, no neighborhood, no business, no person is perfect. That's not what the discussion is in front of us. The discussion in front of us is not about a big sort of, you know, a big sort of rhetorical discussion about whether corporations are good or bad. It depends on the corporation. And I will tell you that a lot of what we look to here in the city of Portland as our breakthrough innovations, whether that's sustainability, whether that's transit, whether that's, you know, we had a someone from Sisters of the Road testify, look on their website of who gives, you know, to their auctions and who gives to support them and others. We've got big corporations and medium-sized corporations in the city of Portland as well that do amazing things. And frankly, if the world's corporations were more Portland-like, I think the world would be a much better place. So this isn't about inherently corporations. Just like you can't say people, you know, named Sam are one way or another. And I want us to send a message, if this gets any national play, back out to the national coverage, the national media, This is inherently about something else. That behavior and intention and actions matter. And that this is about what kind of electoral system we want to devise for ourselves. Citizens United, the 2010 decision, and a subsequent decision out of Washington, D.C., opened up corporate general treasuries to unlimited giving to super PACs. Now, these super PACs are supposed to be independent expenditure committees. Like that, as it was reported, I don't know either individual, but it was reported that a very good friend of a presidential candidate recently gave a multimillion-dollar contribution to an independent PAC so that that presidential candidate could mount attack ads in South Carolina Republican primary. There's probably more than one, but let's just say, I think that's wrong. And whether that person gave through their corporate, general corporate treasury, or whether they gave it individually is, I don't even know the detail of that, but the fact that a corporation, whether nonprofit or for-profit, whether that corporation is a nonprofit union, for me, it's all part of the same thing. Unlimited corporate contributions from their general treasuries, whether for-profit or nonprofit, I believe is corrosive on our electoral system. Today this says that we support, and there's been work done by members of our federal delegation and others, and it's a work in progress. There's other legislation like the Disclose Act that also would help. But today it's really about sending the message that corporations should have rights and responsibilities. It isn't that they shouldn't, in my opinion, have any, because part of the rights and responsibilities is the ability to sue a corporation. But this is about, the focus of this is about the impacts of Citizens United on our electoral system. And that's my legislative intent. And reasonable people can disagree, but that's why I thought it was important to put this forward as part of our federal legislative agenda. So, Carla, would you please call the roll? Or please call the first four folks to testify.
Mayor, just a clarification. I had that there were amendments to the substitute. Did you?
Where's Jennifer?
She's back upstairs.
Okay, I move the amendments to the substitute. I think they're Scribner's.
I believe Jennifer just handed up a clean copy that already included the amendment. That was reflected in your January 12th memo that the council just voted on and agreed to.
Thank you, Attorney Van Dyke. Takes a whole village sometimes. First for folks to testify.
Okay, and let's see. We have 24 for corporate personhood and 4 for federal legislative agenda.
Okay. Let's try to keep it to less than 2 minutes. We'll start with 2 minutes. If the change back and forth gets going too long, which sometimes it does, I might have to cut it even more. Let's start 2 minutes. First 4 people, please.
Are David Delk, John Springer, Janice Thompson, and Susan Rankin. And they'll be followed by Roger Widener. Sorry, Roger. And Regna Merritt, Theodore Songa, and Floyd Jones.
And while folks are getting seated, I guess I would just, give one more. I think he said it really well when John McCain said that the Supreme Court ruling that led to the formation of today's super PACs was, quote, one of the worst decisions I have ever seen, close quote. Mr. Delk.
Yes. Hi. My name is David Delk, and I'm here speaking on behalf of both the Alliance for Democracy and Move to Amend Portland. Both are grassroots organizations formed due to the overriding power corporations have obtained over all aspects of American life. Called into being 15 years ago following a Nation magazine article calling for real populists to please stand up by identifying the real danger, which is corporate power, the Alliance for Democracy is one of the only national organizations with the mission of ending corporate domination. Move to Amend came into being immediately following the February 2010 U.S. Supreme Court Citizens United. While this decision overturned almost a century of judicial decisions affirming the right to control money in politics, Move to Amend strives to expand the scope of this discussion to include the issue of corporate personhood. Move to Amend and the Alliance for Democracy have been clear from the beginning that overturning Citizens United, while a worthy goal, was not sufficient to gain citizen control over corporations. For 125 years, corporations have gone to the U.S. Supreme Court to argue that corporations have constitutional rights the same as you and I. Absurd idea, you say. But the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled repeatedly that they do. The 13th, 14th Amendments ensured that the former slaves would never again be enslaved. The 14th Amendment guaranteed that neither the federal government nor the states could, quote, deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection. Yet, for 100 years, the Supreme Court ignored the 14th Amendment, instead affirming such concepts as separate but equal, and turning their heads the other way regarding Jim Crow laws. Can I continue? Great, thank you. While not finding in the Constitution and the 14th Amendment the justification to ensure the former slaves' rights, they had no problem using that same Constitution to find rights for corporations. Following the Civil War, the courts found that corporations had 1st, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 14th Amendment rights. We usually speak of the 1st and 14th Amendments, but let's look at one other amendment, the 4th Amendment, the Privacy Amendment. It protects people against government search and seizure. The Supreme Court gave this right to corporations in several cases. In 1986, the EPA was denied the ability to use a professional photographer to fly over a plant with a camera after the corporation turned down a request by the EPA for an on-site inspection. The court said the corporation had a right to privacy, which was violated, ignoring the EPA argument that they could not enforce our environmental laws and regulations without being able to do random inspections. I'll skip the next part and get to the conclusion. Now is the time for a movement, a democracy movement. We, the people, must be sovereign in our own nation. We must be the deciders. Decisions are now made in corporate boardrooms, in the halls of Congress and the state legislatures, where cash flows in the form of campaign contributions. And if corporations are not successful in either of those two arenas, they go to the court system, especially the Supreme Court. Our democracy movement starts here today. Thank you, Mayor Adams, for bringing us this resolution affirming the need to amend the Constitution to make clear two important conditions for a successful democracy. Corporations are not people, and money is not speech. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Hi, welcome.
Hi. My name's John Springer. I've been retired for a few years from, I work for big electronics companies and small businesses. And I was retired until Occupy Portland happened, and now I'm not in retirement anymore. I'm a member of the Solutions Committee of Occupy Portland, and we're developing legislative and political solutions that Occupy Portland can act on. I'm grateful for the opportunity to address the council, and I want to thank you, Mayor Adams, for proposing this resolution. Portland can now join the city councils of Los Angeles, New York, and Seattle by supporting a constitutional amendment to correct two bad ideas invented by the courts. That the constitutional rights our founders fought to guarantee us can now be claimed by corporations, and that spending money is constitutionally protected free speech and can't be limited. Most Americans would beg to differ. We certainly do. In October of last year, the General Assembly of Occupy Portland called for an end to so-called corporate personhood. We evaluated a number of proposed solutions. With our friends at the Portland chapter of Move to Amend, we've gathered nearly 600 postcards and generated 1,100 emails to the City Council supporting the mayor's draft resolution while asking that it be made stronger. We were especially concerned that the draft said corporations are not entitled to the same constitutional rights as natural persons. Constitutional rights were written by and for real human beings. The powers that corporations need to operate are given to them by the legislature. They do not arise from the Constitution. They have whatever privileges the legislature grants them. Asserting that corporations have any constitutional rights has caused courts to overturn the very laws passed by our elected representatives that were intended to protect humans and democracy from corporate activities. That's what happened in Citizens United. We worked with city staff to make the Portland resolution as strong as clear it can be, and the resolution before this council today meets our goals. We are especially pleased that it sets in motion a process that we hope will let the people of Portland vote on it, as did the residents of Boulder, Missoula, and Madison. So on behalf of the Solutions Committee of Occupy Portland, I urge you to pass this resolution. You are affirming that our democracy is of, by, and for real people and not a tool of artificial entities created for investors. Corporations are not people. Money is not speech. Thank you.
If I might just read the whereas that you helped craft, I think it's really an important one. Whereas state and federal governments may provide certain privileges to corporations, these privileges do not equate to the rights of natural persons protected by the United States Constitution. I really appreciate the addition of that language. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Hi, welcome.
Hi, my name is Susan Rankin, and I, too, am a member of the Occupy Portland Solutions Committee.
Can you move just a little closer to the mic? We can't afford big volume here.
Sure, sure. Okay, here we go.
There we go. Thanks.
I, too, with the other Occupy Portlanders, are very grateful for this resolution that you have brought to us and for the changes that you have agreed to. I just want to clarify that the first paragraph that was just read used the language same in it. And I wanted to make sure that in the final copy that I have seen as of the 11th of January, you had dropped that word same. And I wanted to make sure that when you do vote on it, that's dropped. Because it's very clear that we don't want corporations to have any rights in the Constitution. They have privileges by state charter. So it's been thrilling to watch the process unfold in city government, where you actually, seek and listen to our advice, and then actually take the advice, listen to our arguments, and this being responsive to the will of people is how government is supposed to work, and it is a breath of fresh air though I'm new to political activism, it feels like a miracle to me that you are not bought off. At least I hope you are not. And the way it appears that state and federal officials are across the country a lot bought off. So it's a very good sign that we have a healthy government here in Portland in order to reclaim our democracy. You yourselves have been very active in politics, obviously, for many years. But it probably comes as a breath of fresh air for you to see so many coming out for the vote today. Maybe you're used to this, but I'm not. Anyway, it seems like a good crowd. And also to be a breath of fresh air, well, how much activity you've been seeing around the city from Occupy Portland and just a big, huge, burgeoning presence of people come to the city and the nation. It appears that the sleeping body politic has awakened, and like the sleeping bear in the spring, we are hungry. And there's much to do to restore our democracy. The American Revolution ended corporate rule when we broke with England. Now, it is a decidedly peaceful revolution, but make no mistake, again, we are tasked to overthrow corporate tyranny. So I look forward to more actions like this one in the city, more resolutions. I look forward to creating new ordinances that affirm our rights and answer our needs in the city, in the locale, along a wide range of issues percolating up in this wakened atmosphere, especially listening to the previous resolution. It's really fantastic to hear all it is we're working on. I'm very grateful for that resolution as well. So who knows, we may see a 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution to end corporate personhood sooner than we think. The 99% has come to life, and it looks like the city of Portland is as much a part of this new energy as I could hope. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Ms. Thompson, welcome back.
Janice Thompson, Common Cause Oregon. Pleased to be here. And Janice Thompson, Common Cause Oregon. Pleased to be here, and thanks for everyone who worked on the resolution, and we do urge a yes vote. The one effect of Citizens United was to equate corporations with people and groups. It did so on the basis of the First Amendment. This means that addressing corporate personhood alone isn't enough, but Citizens United joins this long list of court decisions that inappropriately give corporations undue constitutional protection. So that's why I really appreciated the aspects of this resolution that address corporate personhood as well as Citizens United and concerns about money not being speech and the regulation of independent expenditures. I want to zero in a little bit more on what Citizens United is and isn't to recognize another important element of the resolution about broadening the basis for campaign finance reform regulations to better enable addressing independent expenditures. Mayor Adams, in your introduction, you referred to some questions sometimes about the independence. You referred to independent expenditures from the candidate. You also referred to independent expenditures that are coming from individuals. Citizens United focuses just on independent expenditures, which are those payments for electioneering for or against a candidate that are to be independent of that candidate. Now, they're treated differently from direct contributions to candidate, kind of linked back to the old Buckley versus Vallejo. Whereas Buckley said it was okay to put limits on direct contributions to candidates because free speech concerns were outweighed by a concern for corruption or perception of corruption. In the Buckley litigation, Buckley also overturned some independent expenditures that were in the law that it addressed from individuals and political action committees. on the basis that there could be no corruption. They were independent. How could they be corrupting? So that whole notion that independent expenditures were dealt with differently dates back to then. Unfortunately, Buckley also rejected as a reason for regulating independent expenditures ideas like fairness and equity. So on one hand, as you kind of implied, this is an example where kind of like the legal rationale behind independent expenditures, even before Citizens United from individuals and PACs being okay at unlimited amounts, is really kind of totally, to use a highly technical term, totally counter-wampus. I don't know where that came from. But it just totally doesn't make sense to people kind of from a common sense perspective. And candidates typically really don't like independent expenditures as well because they do lose control of their message. So what this means is that even before Citizens United, there were independent expenditures in federal campaigns, just none paid for with corporate treasury dollars. And that it wasn't even part of the Buckley litigation because there had been this history of regulation on corporate political spending that had dated back to the 1907 Tillman Act. And Mayor Adams, you mentioned that phrase, corrosive. That language comes from a 1990 case that kind of capsulized this whole idea that corporate regulation of corporate spending was a compelling state interest because of the corrosive and distorting effects of the immense aggregation of wealth, and that's in one of the whereases. So that's what Citizens United has overturned, and that meant that corporate entities could begin using corporate treasury dollars for independent expenditures. Corporate entities does include businesses and unions. In the case of unions, that means the treasury dollars comes from the thousands of members of that group. In the case of corporations, corporate treasury dollars means profits. But since independent expenditures before Citizens United could be legally paid for by individuals and PACs, the presence of independent expenditures in those 2010 election cycle and now what we're seeing in 2012 wasn't new, but the volume increased because of the new availability of this source of corporate money. But what that means is that overturning Citizens United alone doesn't really enable regulation of all independent expenditures, which is why I really appreciate the elements of the resolution that recognizes the need to consider other reasons besides this narrow focus on corruption as the basis for regulation of independent expenditures and campaign finance reform in general. We should be thinking about fairness, equity, and common good. Thank you.
So could I ask you a question, Janice? Citizens United allows these independent expenditures donated to by corporations. But at some point during a cycle, don't they have to report, those super PACs have to report who has contributed to them?
Yes. Super PACs, they're a political committee.
So they have to report. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a discussion on a show recently. I'm more and more getting my political news from Stephen Colbert.
A very good source on this topic.
He had really a fascinating discussion one night because his attorney that is representing him in creating his own super PAC, who is a former member of the Federal Elections Commission, said that one of the ways that corporations have figured out how to even hide that they're giving any money at all is to set up a separate, I don't think it was a 501(c), but it was some kind of an entity like that that they would donate to, and then that entity, and those contributions are private. They can't be revealed. And then that entity transfers money to the super PAC, so in fact you can never find out who gives money. Do you know what that is that he was describing?
Yes. I mean, and it's a situation that could have occurred before Citizens United, just without some of the money coming from corporate treasury dollars. but like, you know, the reason this has taken off is that when PACs, prior to Citizens United, when PACs wanted to make contributions, they operated under a certain set of limits.
Mm-hmm.
So there maybe wasn't any limit on the size of independent, of how much they could spend on an independent expenditure, but there was some breaks in terms of how much money could go in.
Right.
And that's ended after Citizens United. And that's has led to the creation of the super PACs, where not only can they just write checks as big as they want, but the checks can come in as big as they want.
But I'm asking before that.
Right. No, so I'm just kind of laying the groundwork. So 501c4s, 501c6s, the U.S. Chamber is a 501c6. They are allowed, and those designations are IRS codes.
Right.
So they're allowed for political, you know, to do political activity under certain limits. Those, again, even before Citizens United were not disclosed. The history on that comes from the civil rights era, when some of the southern states were, somebody else here could probably have this history better. So I will stand corrected if I mess up here. But basically, several southern states were demanding the disclosure of contributions to several civil rights groups. That disclosure was actually very, very dangerous. So the fact that you might think, well, why is the IRS not requiring this disclosure? I mean, it actually, there's some history there. But so that is a corporate entity who is now freed up because of Citizens mm-hmm. United can give to a C4 or the Chamber of Commerce, a C6, or other trade associations. That support will never be disclosed. But that entity is the one that then
and writes a check to the super PAC.
Yeah. So that's kind of how
so it all corporations goes have figured out not only through Citizens United how to give unlimited mm-hmm. amounts of dollars. They figured out how to do it in a way that washes
right.
them clean of even being disclosed of having
right.
given
and,
whatever
and
be, amount. They
and
want.
Because even C3, a percentage of 501c3 organizations,
C3s,
C4s, C6s,
yeah. C3s can't do any candidate stuff.
Yeah.
A percentage of C4 and C6s yeah. aren't disclosed. The bigger the organization, obviously, the more opportunities they have. And the numbers that from the Center for Responsive Politics, just to give you a sense of the volume increase, in 2006, independent right. groups spent $69 million, objectionable enough. In 2010, midterms, they spent $305 million. And it's estimated that in the 2012 presidential cycle, they will spend $450 million in these independent super PACs.
And the point I'm trying to make is, you know, there are those that like and don't like Oregon's campaign finance laws. The one thing that is universally recognized about Oregon's campaign finance laws is that they are transparent and almost instantly so. This Supreme Court decision not only created the opportunity for corporations to donate money heretofore of which they were prohibited from doing, they've figured out how to use mechanisms that might have been established for another good purpose to launder money so that they don't have to suffer the bad publicity of having people know they're funding horrible causes.
Yeah. I mean, some of those disclosure issues existed before Citizens United, but Citizens right. United is
exacerbated
kind of highlighting them.
Yeah. Right.
Good discussion. Thank you all very much. Appreciate your testimony. What's the clock say over there?
So we're going to stay with the corporate personhood testifiers. And the next four will be Jeff Stokey, Karen Coulter, Joe Walsh, and Joan Horton. And they'll be followed by Terry Parker, Richard Wood, Andrew Stone, and Devin Pack.
Hi, welcome to the City Council. Welcome back. Glad you're here. Would you like to begin?
Sure. Thank you. And good afternoon. My name is Jeff Stuckey, working with Move to Amend Portland. I'm speaking in support of both of the resolutions that we're talking about today. The Pentagon budget continues to grow. The defense corporations continue to make huge campaign contributions and spend enormous amounts of money on lobbying, both of which pay off handsomely with billions of dollars in defense contracts and subsidies. All of this concentrates unprecedented corporate power and influence over the level of defense spending. How much more control might we, the people, have over directing the federal budget toward domestic priorities if corporate persons were banned from making campaign contributions to buy influence in the U.S. Congress? I must also ask, have Homeland Security and American cities been sold a bill of goods by defense corporations eager to militarize and arm local police forces with tons of toys and gadgets? Paramilitary equipment and supplies for our police have been brought out to confront nonviolent citizen protesters. I encourage you to remember FDR's dictum, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself," and ask yourselves, who is the real opponent here? Let us remember the words of General and President Dwight Eisenhower over 50 years ago. Quote, "In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition and unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced powers exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals so that security and liberty may prosper together," end quote. The defense industry uses its court-given corporate personhood rights to promote wars all over the globe. Peace is not profitable for them. The two resolutions before us today are deeply interconnected. I urge you to adopt them both. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony. Hi, welcome.
Hi, I'm Karen Coulter. I'm representing the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy. Corporations are creations of the state. They couldn't exist in any form without the legal sanctioning of government. Since citizens are the source of all legitimate power in any representative democracy, the people have the right to define corporations any way we see fit. Because corporations are a creation of the government, they have duties accountable to the people. If minority rule by property was going to be accomplished through corporations, they had to cross the line and become entitled to rights instead. And they did this through simple judicial fiat, no public democratic process. We believe that all corporate constitutional rights should be abolished. Corporate personhood was the pivotal achievement that allowed an artificial entity to obtain the rights of people, thus relegating us to subhuman status. What would change if corporate personhood was abolished? If corporations no longer had the First Amendment right of speech, we could prohibit all corporate political activity. No more corporate contributions to candidates or parties, no more corporate lobbying. Without protections under the 5th and 14th Amendments, corporations could be prevented from merging and owning stock in other corporations, and we could organize openly at our workplaces. The threat to authentic democratic self-governance comes from the fact that corporations have been defined as legal persons. Corporate personhood is the legal fiction that property is a person. We hold the defining property as people, corporate personhood, is fundamentally immoral and a threat to real people and the planet. Let's set out to amend the Constitution in a way that abolishes all rights wrongly given to the corporate form. Local and state resolutions to abolish corporate personhood are critical to achieving social and economic justice and protecting ecological integrity and biodiversity by leading the way to a constitutional amendment. Thank you very much for considering this resolution.
Thanks for your testimony. Mr. Walsh.
My name is Joe Walsh, and I'm representing Individuals for Justice and Oregon Progressive Party, and I can represent them on this one. You have no idea how proud we are of you on this issue. There's some funny incidents that have just happened. The Republicans who are running their primary now are feeling the very effects of the floodgates of huge amounts of money coming in on their primaries. The Montana Supreme Court has just announced, or in the last few days, that the citizens of Montana will not be covered by this decision by the Supreme Court. I'm not a great historian, but I don't know of that ever happening, where a state Supreme Court, knowing the wishes of the federal Supreme Court, said no, not going to cover our citizens, which is exciting and funny at the same time. So what happened now legally? I'm not a lawyer, but I think the only way that that can be appealed is to go to the Supreme Court. So they're going to be forced to look at it again. Again, it is absolutely a pleasure to be here on a positive note. I always say, and I said in my last testimony, it is really good to be wrong when you know you're on the right side. Or to change that around a little bit, to be here and read this resolution and be wrong that you guys would never do this. So I'm really happy to be wrong.
Well, that is high praise and an incredibly low standard. We are pleased to see you. Thanks, Mr. Welsh. Hi, welcome back.
Oh. My name is Joan Horton. I'm the co-chair of Alliance for Democracy here in Portland. I support the abolition of corporate personhood, an issue that AFD has been working on since 1995. It's insulting. Corporate personhood is insulting. It's insulting to we living, breathing, flesh and blood real people. It's not insulting in the name-calling way that children have, but in the deep, damaging, demoralizing way of oppression. The authors of the Constitution thought so highly of real people that they gifted us with unalienable rights, many unalienable rights, not just the right of free speech. These rights were intended to protect us from the power of government and the wealthy. They hinge on a legal definition of person. Corporations saw the value of being a person quite clearly. They worked for 200 plus years to worm, wiggle, and weasel their way into that definition. They didn't settle for being declared like a person or equal to a person. They wanted to be defined as a person. They got this via a series of court cases, mostly using the 14th Amendment. It's particularly insulting that the 14th Amendment has been hijacked for this. It is intended to give legal standing to the argument that real people of African descent are actually whole persons, not some fraction thereof. It was meant to heal the psychological and cultural damage done by slavery, not to help further it. Corporations are not living creatures. They have no soul, no emotions, no beliefs or morals. Their only value is self-enrichment. Our society has accepted this corporate mindset that values money over everything else. We accepted obscene levels of money and other resources being used up in war while failing to meet our human needs and failing to protect the environment. We've accepted powerlessness, the complete opposite of what the Constitution grants us. We have lost our self-respect as real persons, and we are losing our humanity. To save ourselves and the planet, we need to stand up and take back our personhood. Corporations are tools of society. They're not persons, and we need to return them to the toolbox. That's what AFD, Move to Amend, and similar groups have been working toward. Each community must contribute, and this is what Portland is doing. This resolution is our contribution. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you all.
Next four. Next four are Terry Parker, Richard Wood, Andrew Stone, and Devin Pack. And they'll be followed by Becky Strauss, Candace Morgan, Stephen Quirk, and Lisa Sakos.
And for those of you that might have joined us since from the very beginning, in order to foster a full dialogue of all the discussions, while people are testifying, there's no noise. If you like something, thumbs up, thumbs down, jazz hands, twinkle fingers, but no noise. Mr. Parker, would you like to begin?
Thank you. My name is Terry Parker. I'm a Portland resident. Is this resolution a biased form of censorship? The overriding intent of this anti-business resolution appears to be to outlaw one side of the conversation, thereby tying their hands behind their backs, while being in favor of allowing the endorsed side to continue as the only conversation. Such a track record already exists at the city, be it opposing a debate by an opposing party, by the opposite party, or by not making a place at the table for motor-specific representation on PDOT advisory committees. Free speech that incorporates a difference of opinion as part of the official process or is in direct opposition to the control mindset and preconceived special interest agendas is already being suppressed by the city through the vetting of commissions and committees. Just like organizations are comprised of a group of people, corporations have employees that are people, stockholders that are people, and some of those stockholders are people that include retirees on fixed incomes. The stockholders also include people represented in both public and private sector pension plans. If corporations are stripped of specific political involvement activities, then too, so must high-profile, well-funded organizations like the Sierra Club and the Thousand Friends of Oregon. Money from those organizations should not be viewed as free speech either. Equity requires any regulation be applied equally across the board. If you choose to pass this resolution, the wording needs to be amended to include corporations and other defined organizations. Moreover, if there is a need for a constitutional amendment, it would be to stop the federal government or even the city of Portland from handing out taxpayer dollars to special interest groups, like to the Surface Transportation Policy Project, which the EPA funds, or the BTA here in Portland, which receives money from the city, and then have these groups come back with paid lobbyists hawking their special interest agendas to elected officials as if they had become part of a taxpayer-funded political machine. The behavior is a stench from the past when smoke-filled backroom politics were used to influence, manipulate, control, and dominate the decision-making process. Buying a lobby effort with taxpayer dollars is also a corrupt assault on what a democracy should be. Thank you.
And Mr. Parker, you're consistent in your comments. I want to give you a chance to respond to the fact that the ACLU was supportive of the Supreme Court decision on Citizens United, and I don't think that group is necessarily at least known for being a staunch conservative group. And Senator McCain, who is their presidential Republican, presidential flag bearer, is very critical of the Citizen United decision. So what are your thoughts, given your testimony, what are your thoughts on this? You know, this issue is less partisan, at least in my mind, than it is about, you know, fairness, transparency, openness in our electoral process.
Well, I'm not viewing it as a partisan issue. I'm viewing it as a fairness issue. And I hope that's what my testimony tried to convey, was that if you have restrictions on one side of an issue, and oftentimes the corporations are opposite as a couple of the groups that I mentioned, and that's why I mentioned those two specific groups, then the fairness is that the same restrictions apply to both sides of the conversation. And I totally agree that executive pay and some of that is way out of control. So,
right, and at least my legislative intent, people can interpret it the way they want. And the way I define corporation and the way the IRS defines corporation is for or nonprofit. So it applies for me. It applies.
I was just looking for fairness, and that's what I
think we've actually achieved it more in this resolution than your testimony, at least.
Could be, because I haven't seen the resolution.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Parker. I appreciate it. Sir?
Richard Wood, I want to commend the council again on this resolution. I just caution on the wording. Again, I don't think it's strong enough. This is an attack by corporations. There is a difference between a smaller corporation and larger, but
it is apparent that they are trying to gain equal footing and try to basically make the country run the way they would prefer it to run. And I'm using the big they. I spent the last 30-something years of my life working for the Fortune 100 companies. Mid-level manager, I've supervised 40 skilled tradesmen out in the shop floor in an assembly plant. I've supervised 40 people writing software code for the state of Oregon in your healthcare systems. I've been around industry and watched it. I've left it for personal reasons. I left the chemical industry because of deep water injection. deep well injections are waste hazards and no life cycle for the industry, but I was a valued member of that community while I worked for them. From there, I went into some other lines, but bottom line is I've worked for General Motors, Hewlett-Packard, EDS, writing software and controls for systems, state, and government, and I have never found that corporate person that was behind all of this. I've escorted people inside of General Motors upstairs that were teaching GM how to make people into commodities and turning General Motors into a commodity-driven organization, including the people. And to me, software programmers, there's no commodities out there. I know these folks. So I watch this, and I don't know who that person is that has this voice. I don't understand what they're for. I don't understand how that came about. In the Constitution, I don't see that thing having that many rights. So I don't know how it got this far to begin with. There are bigger things at play behind this, and people wanting power and money, and organizations like ALEC are usurping our Constitution. But basically, I'm here to witness. I've never found this corporate person. I've never seen him. I've seen that corporate person ask me to hire H-1B individuals for cheaper salary for state projects that didn't get them any less revenue, but they were paying their employees a lot less with H-1B visas. I've been given a choice between a software developer or somebody out of college that happened to go buy software. I'm the person that had to pick that person up that didn't know anything and train him in his job and bring him and carry him along. And I've got a staff of 20 out of 40 people that the company's charging senior rates for to the government, and I guarantee these people are not getting senior rates. I was asked not to hire Americans because of the salary discrepancy. We want money. We want to get paid for what we do. So I'm just testifying. I've never found this corporate person. I don't know who he is. He doesn't exist out there, and I thank you for the time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Hi, welcome.
Hi, my name is Andrew Stone. I'm here lobbying for myself. I appreciate your time and attention, and I understand the dedication it takes to the process to allow us to do this. I have a two short paragraph quote, somebody else's words, and I hope you've already read this, but just in case. While I am bound to follow the Citizens United decision, I do not have to agree with the Supreme Court's decision, and to be absolutely clear, I do not agree with it. For starters, the notion that corporations are disadvantaged in the political realm is unbelievable. Indeed, it has astounded most Americans. The truth is that corporations wield inordinate power in Congress and in state legislatures. It is hard to tell where government ends and corporate America begins. The transition is seamless and overlapping. In my view, Citizens United has turned the First Amendment's open marketplace of ideas into an auction house for Friedmanian corporatists. Freedom of speech is now synonymous with freedom to spend. Speech equals money. Money equals democracy. This decidedly was not the view of the constitutional founders, who favored the preeminence of individual interests over those of big business, et cetera, et cetera. He goes on. Lastly, I am compelled to say something about corporate personhood, which he puts in quotes. While I recognize that this doctrine is firmly entrenched in the law, I find the entire concept offensive. Corporations are artificial creatures of law. As such, they should enjoy only those powers, not constitutional rights, but legislatively conferred powers that are concomitant with their legitimate function, that being limited liability investment vehicles for business. Corporations are not persons. Human beings are persons, and it is an affront to the inviolable dignity of our species that courts have created a legal fiction which forces people, human beings, to share fundamental natural rights with soulless creations of government. Worse still, while corporations and human beings share many of the same rights under the law, they clearly are not bound equally to the same codes of good conduct, decency, and morality, and they are not held equally accountable for their sins. This is his last sentence here. Indeed, it is truly ironic that the death penalty and hell are reserved only to natural persons. So who is this radical activist? Is this Michael Moore or somebody? Do you know who it is? This is Montana State Supreme Court Justice James Nelson on December 30th of 2011. He actually wrote a dissent upholding the Citizens United division, and he was so incensed and embarrassed, apparently, that he felt compelled legally to do so, that he wrote this dissent of his own dissent, right, to clarify what his position actually was. So the upshot of all this is that the Supreme Court of the state of Montana, as of December 30th, 2011, supports you and says, in effect, a vote to support corporate personhood is a vote for factually confirmed, they determined, that was their decision, for factually confirmed corruption. So,
thank you.
I got no big finish. That's it.
you did well. Thanks for your testimony. You. Sir.
Hello. My name is Devin Pack. I'm with the Solutions Committee of Occupy Portland. We thank the City Council for considering this resolution, and we would urge the City Council to adopt the original language of the resolution without amendment. We also feel that it is important that this resolution be presented to the people of Portland to ensure that it has the maximum popular mandate and that it is expressed to the Oregon judiciary how much Portland favors an opposition to this doctrine of corporate personhood, a doctrine which exists without without legislative or executive precedent. I do not believe that there is anything in the history of the Portland City Council that has supported the development of this principle. The principle of corporate personhood constitutes a fundamental assault upon the democratic theory of our government. Already, by the application of corporate personhood to the First Amendment, we see a period of paralysis and inactivity on the federal government that is unprecedented. Allow me to show you how it is a Pandora's box through the application to other amendments. By leveraging the 14th Amendment to apply the 4th Amendment to corporate personhood and to corporations, fire marshals could have to get a warrant from a judge before being able to conduct a routine fire safety inspection. Through the application of the 2nd Amendment to this doctrine of corporate personhood, private mercenary companies could stockpile armored vehicles and weapons unregulated. Through the appliance of the 6th Amendment, the city of Portland would not be able to engage in regular regulatory practices without having a jury trial through the 6th Amendment requirement. The doctrine of corporate personhood shifts us away from a democratic theory of government and into a plutocratic theory of government, which is something that will not allow Portland to operate as it has and be as wonderful a city as it has been. 160 years ago, the Supreme Court made the error of recognizing too few persons, and great injustice and oppression resulted from that. Now, the Supreme Court recognizes scraps of paper as persons, and this misperception creates just as much oppression to the people. And so we need to end this doctrine and challenge it firmly. Thank you.
I don't know what you do for a living, but you've got to talk more, because that was really well said. Thank you very much. I mean, well presented. Thank you all for all of you. Great testimony. I appreciate it. How many more people do we have?
About
Twelve more. All right. It's 4 o'clock, and I'd like you to try to distill your testimony, if you can, to a minute. If you need more than a minute, let me know up front, but let's see what we can do, because we find between 4 and on, people start getting sleepy, and we don't like that.
Next four, please come on up, are Becky Strauss, Candace Morgan, Stephen Quirky, and Lisa Sankos. And they'll be followed by Anna Joy Gillis, Nicholas Caleb, B. Conley, and Pam Ali.
Ms. Strauss, would you like to begin?
I'll go ahead. My name is Becky Strauss. I'm here with the ACLU of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity again this afternoon. You received written testimony from me yesterday, and we may hand it out today or unnecessary, so I'll just be very brief and kind of summarize the main point. The ACLU of Oregon is in opposition to the resolution. We agree that protecting the integrity of the electoral process is essential to the maintenance of a free society, including the ability of that society to protect fundamental civil liberties like free expression. What we believe is that meaningful reform of campaign finance is going to come from strong public financing and from strong and timely disclosure laws, not by undermining the First Amendment. The constitutional amendments that the resolution is urging our Oregon delegation to adopt and then send out for ratification to the states is, I should actually quickly correct an error in my written testimony. I think I referred to both of the proposed amendments as affecting Oregon's constitution. I believe only one addresses the states, but they're both would mark the first occasion in our nation's history that the Constitution has been amended to weaken the First Amendment. We think that there are issues, and we think that undue influence on campaigns is a real issue, but amending the Constitution and weakening the First Amendment is not the right approach.
Thank you. And I assume your written statement is on your website?
No, it's not. I'd be happy to make it public, or we can post it up there. Sure,
that'd be great.
So I'm sorry I didn't read your letter. So I am curious why you don't distinguish between the issue here of corporations not being available for First Amendment protections, but with individuals, you seem to be treating them both the same. Is there a short